Hey everyone, welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast. And I'm going to change our tagline a little bit. The Horse Geeks podcast, where we talk about horses and riding and life from the inside out. I had to add life to that.
Okay.
Because horses and life, it's all kind of the same thing.
It is all intertwined, isn't it?
Yes.
For most of us.
So I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer. And with me again is the lovely Deb Romero, a certified Alexander technique instructor. And we're going to pick up where we left off from the last podcast, talking a bit about balance, with specifically sort of what we got out of a published, was it an article or a paper?
That's a good question.
I have it in front of me.
I think it's considered a paper.
Yeah, I think it's a paper.
The way it's written.
Yes, so I have it under Systematics. 1970 is when it was published. And I'm guessing Systematics was maybe the publication. And the article is titled Balance as a Function of Intelligence by W.H.M. Carrington. Mm-hmm. And balance as a function of intelligence, I thought was a pretty interesting way to look at when we talk about balance. And a lot of times working with horses and riders, you can see in real time, because riding, you can't think about riding and learning and learn how to ride, like riding a bike. You have to actually get on there and figure out that coordination to be able to do it, which is the intelligence of the body. You can't just use the mind to learn how to drive a car, ride a bike, ride a horse. Different physical activities require a learning of coordination through use of the body. So I really liked this idea of looking at this paper by Carrington, Balance as a Function of Intelligence. So you're the one who suggested the paper, which I thought was awesome. And what were some of the highlights for you out of that?
Great question. So I wrote down a couple that kind of stuck out for me. And here's a quote: the unique quality of the whole performance lies in the reduction of effort.
So interpret that for us in a practical way.
I think so many of us, I was on an equine seniors Facebook group, and somebody had said, I just started riding again and my legs are killing me. And it was amazing to see all the responses, you know, of just do it, just push through it, all of these answers. And I said, you know, maybe you're just using too much muscular contraction. You know, maybe you need to let go a little bit. I think we think everything we do, especially as riders, has to be full of effort and
sweat.
It's
going to require effort.
Yeah. Yes. So,
I've mentioned this before, but especially working with competitive riders, going back from complex work, which is all competitive riding is it's a complexity of putting together the basics into different recipes, but your ingredients are what we call the basics or simple work. So when I take people back to simple work to improve the quality of the ingredients, the question comes up frequently enough that I've mentioned it a couple of times. People go, when does the hard part start? Like, when do we start really working is how the question comes out. Like, this is way too easy. When do we start working? And I go, it's not that we work harder. What we do is we take ingredients and we take simple ingredients and make a variety of recipes. That's really but it doesn't have to be hard to cook a very complex dish if you understand how to put the ingredients together. And if you're starting, all good chefs will say, find quality ingredients. You have a better outcome to your recipe.
And that's a good way to put it, because I think a lot of us, and I came from this, is we always think we need to fix our horse, but are we really paying?
Everybody thinks that except the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. The horse is like, I'm fine. You are my problem. You are my problem.
And we forget about how big of a component we are.
Yes.
In their balance. If we're not focusing on our own balance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's why when he says a function of intelligence, what does that mean? And John Dewey coined a phrase called thinking in activity. And I think you've mentioned this before. You've really got to bring it to consciousness.
Yes.
Otherwise, your habits take over and your habits may not be serving you very well.
Yes. And so, the shift I find as we work on better force management, better mechanics with horses and riders, I had this hilarious guy I used to teach. And even though the body is feeling more ease, it actually takes more concentration, like more mental focus, mm-hmm. to consciously be aware, not even control, but just be aware of different things that are below the level of consciousness because they're a habit. We just have always done it. And he was so hilarious because he's riding around and he's like, I need to stop. I am having a helmet fire. And I was like, that's where that came from, was him going, I'm having a helmet fire. So even though we were just working on simple work, basic ingredients, it was so such a different type of concentration. That the effort was more.
That's a good point.
Mental.
A different focus, a different channel of where your thought process, and because that, you know, the psychophysicalness of it all, the body could be producing a fear response by the way it's being used, or the opposite could be, you could be thinking fear and then the body responds to that.
Absolutely.
So it can go both ways. It can be, it's like the fear of falling. That thought, or maybe it's because you don't have good balance. Therefore, that thought comes up. So that's what he also mentioned in this writing, was that, you know, the relationship between both is critical.
Yeah, I'm looking for where I highlighted. It was actually a quote by Matthias Alexander, who is the founder of the technique that you are certified in. Mm-hmm. And this part fascinated me. He writes, so Carrington writes, Alexander's studies soon brought home to him the fact that the voice cannot be considered in isolation from the rest of the body. The whole body is involved in using the voice. In fact, it might be said that we use the body in order to use the voice. However, mm-hmm. the term use implies a user as well as the thing used. And this inevitably leads to a reconsideration of the division that we have habitually made between mind and body. Eventually, we arrive, as did Alexander, at the concept of using oneself, or as he called it, the use of the self, mm-hmm. which includes body and mind.
Yes.
And I think when we think of effort, like what most people are describing, if I really break it down, is when we ride competitively, we're really not having to think and be we're not having to creatively think, I should say. I should be specific. We're not having to be creative in our thought. We're following whatever the jump course is, or the dressage test is, it mapped out as like geometric patterns. So we don't have to be creative or aware. The thinking is sort of mapped out for us, but we spend a lot of effort physically to fit into the prescribed pattern. And when we start to look at just the internal use, or how a body finds balance, or a body and mind find balance, that is a uniquely creative endeavor that requires a lot of awareness, and it has no rules.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a learned thing. It's not all genetics. Everybody learns how to walk differently.
Yes. And we develop our little, like we said before, our software programs of movement as we're between, you know, newborns and maybe mid to late teenage years. That's when we're developing those software programs. But we can change the software programs.
Yeah, if you're thinking an activity and you're aware of that, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He also said maintaining efficient upright posture is fundamental to our health and well-being.
Yes. I think the mechanical use of the body is going to affect all systems of the body.
Exactly.
It's a closed system. So when we improve function in any part of the system, you can improve function in the entire system. And when it comes to just moving our bodies around, that's a primary function of our body that's going to affect everything.
So, and he did say a lot also about if you don't have good balance, whatever that means at this moment, you're not free to use your hands and legs. And I thought that was, you know, that's
and
where I get a vision of somebody in a walker, you know, that they're balancing off their hands and legs and not finding their true spinal balance integrity.
Right. So right back to the beginning of this paper that he wrote, something really struck me, and I hadn't even really considered it before until I read this. So I'm quoting from his paper, "Upright posture, the phenomenon to which Darwin referred, is a unique accomplishment scarcely to be compared with anything to be seen in the animal world. It involves two distinct features. First, there is the process of rising up against gravity, which requires intense muscular effort, but then there is the substitution for this effort of a most delicate poise and balance, an equation of forces brought about by an interplay of the sensory and motor mechanisms by which all muscular effort is practically eliminated. The unique quality of the whole performance lies in this reduction of effort." So then he goes on to say the rearing, like a rearing horse, which is actually the example he used, takes much more effort to sustain, and the attitude is precarious and unstable. The hallmark of our upright posture, however, is that once established, it is both reliable and effortless.
Yeah. And you know what else is interesting? I remember him saying in the papers, we can't go back. We can't go back to being a quadruped.
Well, and the first thing I wrote down in reading this paper was the uprightness of our posture that developed our also unique large brain. Mm-hmm. That it wasn't like we developed the brain first and then decided to stand up, but it was learning to stand up, which we still learn as humans. Mm-hmm. We learn. We're not born standing up, walking around, right? Where a horse is up within 15 minutes of being born and finding its legs. We take a year or more to learn how to walk. So it's fascinating that what he's saying is, with kind of some references to Darwin, is that our uprightness, freeing our arms and making our limbs available for more use, is what allowed our brain to develop.
Yeah.
And I never thought of it that way. I guess I hadn't thought of it much at all, but if I had thought of it, I would have thought somehow the brain got big and we had to stand up because we had big brains. I don't know. But it makes more sense to think, wow, we became upright and the brain furthered in development because of our uprightness. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me, I had to go back and look up too, there was a researcher, the last name is Slipshire, S like Sam, L-I-I-J-P-E-R. And Slipshire's two-legged goat is quite a well-known study. So this goat was born with a genetic defect, didn't have front legs. Wow. And so this goat, they didn't kill the goat. It kind of learned to walk around on its hind legs and got by for many years being mobile on its hind legs, even though it was born as a quadruped. And the goat died of natural causes. And afterwards, Slipshire did a necropsy. And what he found was fascinating, that a quadruped spine, like a horse and most goats, their thoracolumbar spine is very stable. What we call the thoracolumbar curvature is really a curved, not curves like a human curves. Mm-hmm. Their thoracolumbar spine is very straight, but the bones have different directions in their orientation. That's the curvature of a quadruped spine. But this goat, after living a life on his hind feet, had a modified spine and a modified pelvis.
Wow.
So the spine, just from the goat being upright, developed the same four natural curves that humans have, which is completely different than a normal goat spine that's walking around on four legs, which is very similar to a horse spine. And he said, not only were there modifications in the spine and the pelvis, but that the leg bones and leg muscles had also changed. So I found that fascinating, because I go, I guess you have to, like early man, or when we started becoming more upright as humans, you had to get up there and do it. And then the bones changed, and then the breathing changed, and then the brain changed. And it was like all of those changes became adaptations, shifting from a quadruped to a biped. And I just found that fascinating, that in the span of one lifetime, that goat's spine went from looking like a goat quadruped spine to looking more like a human biped spine in one lifetime. Like, that's an amazing adaptability of a body.
Yes. Yeah. And I think sometimes we forget that we're adaptable too, that we can still adapt and change, you know, from a habitual posture that's maybe not serving us very well to better use, no matter what your age. It's available.
That was another part I highlighted in the paper, that not all human beings are successful in mastering this art of balance to any high degree. Those who do not habitually make up with muscular effort what they lack in poise, and inevitably become misshapen, clumsy, and awkward in movement. They achieve stability at the expense of mobility.
I think that's key, because we think balance is a place. We think it's...
Or posture is static.
Yeah, as posture is non-moving. And, you know, he also mentioned in there that the uprightness makes us more available for movement. That
yes,
and we become much better at moving being upright.
Yes. I think this is what you're talking about. The shape of the spine has changed so that what began in quadrupeds as the compression member in a weight-bearing compound girder in man becomes a vertical weight-bearing flexible rod stiffened a little by rigging, which is our muscles, like a mast of a yacht, a series of curves balanced on top, one on top of the other.
Yes.
But most of all, the entire musculature was affected by reason of its being called upon to function in an entirely different relationship within the gravitational field. And that's sort of like talking about the goat or the humans. And he talks about how if we think of our spine with four natural curves in this upright position, that like the mast of a boat, it's sort of balanced by the soft tissues, but that becomes the efficient axis to be able to move in any given direction with a soft tissue adjustment. So if that axial skeleton is compromised, it compromises all directions of movement, all muscle use.
And usually we go into some sort of shortening, which is that thinking we need to work harder to make it happen.
So what do you mean by shortening? What shortens?
Contraction of the muscles, or you can even think of physically getting shorter.
So would that be like the rigging pulling the mast down? If the mast of the boat were flexible, the rigging could bend it and pull it downward into exaggerated curves. Would that be a good image?
Yeah. So you've got the law of opposites going on there too. If you've got heavy pulling on one side, you've got heavy stretching on the other side.
Mm.
It's a different type of pulling, but I usually see more injuries in the muscles that are being pulled than the muscles that are being contracted.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, and that goes back to our, you know, Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And so you can't move your body in isolation anywhere. It's like if you're going to contract one muscle, another muscle is going to be super stretched.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we could talk about it as compression and tension.
Yes.
If one element is compressed, another element goes into tension.
Yes.
And balance is really about equalizing this action reaction opposing force thing. That's where we find what he's calling poise. Poise is a great word for balance, because it's poise is a temporary point, a moving point, where we think of posture as
either
military posture, which is static, or I think it was in this article, that he mentions our idea of good posture being based on like Greek statues. Mm-hmm. And I never thought of that, but I go, in our evolution to uprightness and all of us as baby humans having to learn to be upright, how do we learn? We learn through observation as well as trial and error. So then we all want to know, how do you do it right? And we look to Greek statues or artwork or the military or some consensus of what is right.
Or models. That's a big one.
Yeah. Or models. Yeah. Things we see in magazines. And I think a consensus doesn't make it true. It just means a lot of people agree that that's important. Right.
Yes.
So we can think something is right without it being a physical reality, without it necessarily matching the laws of nature or the laws of physics. We can all say, oh, yes, this is what we want, because that's what everybody else is doing. And I think that's people's construct of posture. So the words balance and poise and equilibrium take that construct away, because that's something you have to experience. You can't mimic necessarily.
You exactly. Have to sort of and if it. We don't experience the failure of it, we're never going to experience the good parts about it.
Right.
So the bad habit, if we don't know that we have that habit, we're not going to think that we need to change anything.
Right. Which, you know, I just did a lesson with a woman, and this exact thing came up, where when we started the lesson, she told me the last lesson, her left hip joint was really bothering her. So she had to get off early And when she researched stuff on the internet, she's like, oh, I know I have tons of arthritis. She goes, I think I, you know, I need to go to a doctor and have this looked at. It's getting really painful. I probably need a cortisone injection, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting old, all of that. So when she rode, we looked at her riding. And one of the first things that kind of came up was she's still retaining a tiny bit of a left, a right lateral bend through her spine. So looking at her riding, the right side of her rib cage was slightly collapsed and curved, where the left side of her rib cage was very straight. And when we ride horses, what's interesting is the spinal function of rotation, which is twisting in a horse, it feels like rocking. And that function of the horse creates lateral bending in the rider.
Okay, so, now I see where you're going.
Right. So it could have been her horse was creating the right lateral bend, or it could be her habit off the horse that she's brought to her horse. Right. And no judgment or blame. It's just what we all do. So when she straightened out and concentrated on straightening out her right rib cage, her horse changed.
Right.
So chicken and egg, who cares who started it, right? But the human is the one who can change it more easily than the horse. So the horse changed. Then she was still feeling the hip pain. So we worked on her vertical balance, forward and back and forward and back. And her internal alert, so this pain became the body's red alert system to go, something's wrong, something's wrong. But her pattern that she wasn't conscious of was a small right lateral bend and leaning back behind vertical, where she was contracting her quadriceps all the time. And because of the right lateral bend, all of the force of her movement off the horse and on the horse was concentrating in her left hip joint. And so as soon as we started to rearrange that, she got off after that ride. We ended up having to lengthen her stirrups and we had to like play with things, but she could feel as she just played with the alignment of her skull, spine, and seat bones, straightening the lateral bend and then playing with tilting forward, tilting back, tilting forward, tilting back. In tilting forward, there was a specific place where her quadriceps relaxed and she felt the adductor muscles engaging, right? She felt her lower abdominal muscles engaging. And it was fascinating to her to feel how just repositioning the mechanical body changed the muscle use. So, sorry, the bones. So as we changed the alignment of her skeleton, which was unfamiliar, so her brain was not happy about this at all, right? We have to go back and forth. But she could feel how adjusting the vertical alignment of her axial skeleton specifically affected which muscles were used and how they were used. And that became an internal guide to she felt the distinct change in her hip joint mobility from one posture to the next or one use to the next. And then as the left hip joint felt more mobile and she felt her quadricep release and her adductors kick in, it was like the pain went away.
Yeah.
And you helped me with that.
I told her
the very same thing happened to me that Deb helped me with.
I need my knee. I need an MRI.
I need an MRI on my right knee. And I told her, I said, I was doing a similar thing, but I had a left lateral bend in my spine and a slight forward rotation on the same side. And every time I did that, I said, it was shooting pain in my knee. I'm literally walking around with a knee brace on, hobbling, went to a chiropractor who said, go get an MRI. I'm all scheduled to go get an MRI, go see an orthopedic. My knee was just debilitating. It was killing me.
It was the knee.
Yeah. And you show up and you go, it's not the knee. Or no, what did you say? You say it's not usually the knee.
Not usually the knee.
And then you helped me discover what I was doing with my lumbar on the left side of my body. And I literally stood out there, like, especially working with horses on the ground is where my knee would be the most aggravated. Mm-hmm. And when I rode, I didn't have knee pain.
Duh.
Right? Because I'm more conscious of my use when I ride.
It's a miracle.
But on the ground, I was in my normal habit. So my knee would have a shooting pain. I would take the lateral bend and the twist out of the left side of my spine, and my knee pain went away. Like instantly. I've never had such a direct experience of the relationship between mechanics and pain.
That's a good teacher.
Pain is a great teacher. Yeah. And it was a constant reminder. It was like, oh no, you don't get to think about this once a day. You're going to think about this about every 30 seconds. Yeah. All day.
Yeah. And so if you think about it, it was a total balance. Just like for your student, it would be interesting to see if she creates that same position posture of balancing on the ground. Does she stand on her heels?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I asked her to play with, because the hip pain started when she started exercising. She started going for walks for a mile or two. She even was jogging a little, and she was trying to get fit, and her hip started hurting. And I said, you know, this is what we've been doing with your horse. Same thing, right? I said, it's just as true for riders as it is for horses. So adding positive stress to mechanical malfunction equals pain.
Positive stress. I like that, because I hear when people, and I imagine horses, make changes, there can be some type of pain involved.
Change is going to bring some level of discomfort. Yes.
Right. Discomfort maybe is a better word, but
yeah. But shooting pain, that tells us it's a mechanical malfunction.
Yeah. Yeah. I most of the time when somebody says I have knee pain or I have shoulder pain, I have to take that into context that means that's just the area they feel pain.
Right.
It's not necessarily the joints.
Right.
And it's still usually today, a muscular efforting problem of not balancing well, not balancing the axial skeleton well. That's just like you found out. If you're not balancing this very well, it's going to affect your limbs. And that's what it did for you.
Yes. And that's what I was explaining with my client today, was you are creating, like, the force, the concentrated force is being put on that left hip joint. That's why you feel pain. That's also what develops arthritis. It's how you lose joint mobility, right? Which reduces the synovial fluid and can develop arthritic changes. So it's first the excessive load, the excessive concussive forces that are creating the problem. And a lot of times with horses, you can't find pathology, but you see lameness.
Exactly.
And I'm sure that was true with my knee, although it was a knee I had torn the meniscus. So, and I'm sure it has arthritis, that would have been addressed. And you're going, yeah, but the knee is where you're putting all the concussion. Mm-hmm. The reason you're putting too much concussion on your right knee is because of this little twisty bendy thing you got going on the left side of your back. And I was like, son of a bitch. Oh my God. It's true.
Yeah. We all have to have teachers. We all have to have people helping us, because we don't know what we don't know.
Well, you can't get out of your own nervous system loop without new information, which has to come from another body sometimes. And as always, this change with the rider that I was describing with pain in her left hip joint, I had to get out my phone and take pictures. And because what was actually straight over gravity, which she could see in the pictures, felt like she was totally tipped forward. And what felt normal to her was obviously behind the vertical line of gravity. She was leaning back in the saddle, right? And that in her brain felt straight.
That was her habitual normal.
Right, because our brains are so powerful at just normalizing our habit and making it feel correct. So if you think you're correct, how would you ever know that you're not? And I go, well, eventually you're going to know because you're going to have pain.
The pain's the teacher, yep.
Or you're going to lose mobility. Mm-hmm. But people just go, well, I'm just getting old. And I've heard people say that at 25, 35, 65. I go, okay, maybe 85, you can start to say that. But really, you know, up until we're in our 80s, do we really need to have that much pain and lose that much mobility? And I have living examples of people who don't. So I go, it's possible.
It's possible. It's possible. The adaptability and the willingness to learn and, you know, look at your habits and have the ability to change them that matter or be willing to change.
Yeah. I mean, even in neuroscience, the old model of the human brain was that it sort of kind of not disintegrates. What's the word I'm looking for? It deteriorates as we mm-hmm. age, right? The new model in neurophysics or even neuropsychology is that we become more efficient.
Oh, I like that. I'm glad I'm becoming more efficient.
And it was an NPR article interview or something I had listened to. And it really struck me because our paradigm that we're deteriorating with age is a big one, right? That gravity over time just pulls us down and we deteriorate like an old log in the pasture, right? And we don't. Like, this interview was fascinating because he said, you know, when we're born, our brains are like the computers from the 70s that used to take up a whole room and had these inefficient, like, you know, tickets that you punch and super expensive, kludgy and inefficient. And that's our baby brain. And he said, as we age, we actually become more efficient in the use of our brain. And by the time we're aging, we should be like smartphones, that we're so efficient that we actually, it requires less space and the technology is faster and you have all these files that can compress more. So I found that a fascinating paradigm to think, I'm not deteriorating with age. I'm actually becoming more efficient. I'm becoming like technology. I go, I'm becoming even from a smartphone to a smartwatch. I go, that's even more efficient. You know, you see people talking into their wrist now, like Dick Tracy.
And, Tracy.
Right. Or, you know, we get in airplanes and fly around, but eventually, you know, maybe like Star Trek, we get teleported. Right.
That'd be great.
So technology keeps becoming more and more efficient, which, this surgeon was saying is a much better paradigm of looking at our brain development as we age. And I think the use of our body, coming full circle back to where we started, is that because the brain developed after our uprightness, that how we poise, how little effort we use to stay upright is part of what allows our brains to continue to evolve and develop even as we age.
Yes.
That the more we take care of our balance, which isn't a good or bad, right or wrong. Balance is a state of just continually using your body in a healthy relationship with gravity. And I like the word poise. Or what you always talk about, instead of just like going about our day with our brain, letting our body follow along, that we pause long enough to think of what's the most comfortable or efficient way to use my body in this daily activity. And we can further discover better use or more poise with what we do.
Yeah, I've had some clients just say, you know, until I see you again, just pause before you open that door and ask yourself, could I do it differently?
Yeah.
just asking the question, could I do it differently, can really bring all of your habits up quickly.
Absolutely. And bringing this rider's attention to the feeling of the ball on the top of the femur moving in the socket on the pelvis. It was like as she played with too far forward, too far back, and went into her normal, she started to sense how she was restricting the mobility of the joint. It couldn't move. And in a new place through experimentation, it wasn't right or wrong, but there was a distinct change in her poise or her balance where that joint suddenly felt available. She felt the increased range of motion of that little ball rolling around in the socket. And I go, that's what our joints should feel like, open and available, not part of the rigid holding.
Yes. And that's what I say to myself as kind of a mantra when I ride is, are all my joints open and available? Am I locking somewhere? I'm always asking myself that. And it seems my knees are a big issue, but
it's not the knees.
It's not the knees. It's that I brace against the stirrup. So I'm always asking myself, is my ankle available? Are the backs of my knees available to me?
So jump always- rider. No, I found it. I think a couple of podcasts ago, we talked about, or you brought up, how we have a concentration of proprioceptors in our ankles.
Yes.
And how, as jump riders, both of us, it is drilled into your head, heels down. And with these short stirrups, we're constantly jamming our ankles into a hyperflexed state and locking them there. Yes. And it's like, what does that do to the proprioception of your entire leg and maybe even lower half of your body? Because you're just shutting it down.
It's proven that just shuts down that neurotransmitting path. No information's getting to the brain. So, and that's part of learning to get out of your habits is opening up all that information. And sometimes it can really be overwhelming.
And I would have to Google how many joints we have in our body, but I think it's over 200.
Yes. I don't,
different
I'm not
joints
sure.
in our body. Sure. I think it was a different Alexander instructor once said, the number 271 sticks in my brain, but I could be wrong. I'd have to Google it and find out. But it's an insane number of joints in our skeleton, which are for mobility.
Exactly.
And when we use joints, like the way this rider was, sort of not balancing our axial skeleton and putting stress on leg joints to create stability. That's the point of it, is to create stability because the axial skeleton is in a misalignment with gravity. So the limbs kick in to stabilize the body, and that creates excessive load, excessive strain. You could say strain, or you could just say concussive load on joints, where the joints are meant to move the force, not support the force. So that's arthritis, pain, loss of mobility is just a little bit of excessive stabilizing force in the wrong place, according to the design of the body.
Right.
It's not what joints are designed to do.
Exactly.
So any final thing to wrap this up? Again, I'm just going to repeat that the paper we talked about was titled Balance as a Function of Intelligence. The author is W.H.M. Carrington, C-A-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. And if you want to learn about the two-legged goat, which was pretty interesting, that researcher, he's quite famous. I don't have the title of his paper or even his first name and initials, but the last name is Slipshire. S like Sam, L-I-I-J-P-E-R, and his two-legged goat. Both of those are interesting just to Google and read about a little bit. And the goat shows us how fast bodies adapt.
We can. Yes.
That blew me away.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So any final words you want to add, Deb?
I just love this last line in this paper. He states, balance must be regarded as a function of intelligence, a function indeed on which the survival of our species may ultimately depend.
Mm.
So,
yes.
Just his final thoughts on the whole thing.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Good place to end.
Yes.
Thank you guys for joining us. And as always, please like, subscribe, follow, share, whatever. Hope you like the podcast. And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Everybody.